Welcome back in to Good Morning Tri-Cities, hour number two on this Friday after Thanksgiving. This is Mark Ferguson sitting in for Matthew Hill today, and we're certainly glad you are with us. Hope that you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We've got mostly cloudy skies, our temperature 38 degrees. It's breezy, it's cold out there this morning, and we're glad you're by the radio here on 870 AM WPWT Colonial Heights. We have a very special guest with us today. It's been 44 years as of yesterday since the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States. There has probably not been a topic that's been discussed more over the last 44 years by the American people, but more has been able to be found out in the last few years as more CIA files and FBI files are made known, and then people become are coming forward to tell their stories after all these years. And Wim Dankbar from the Netherlands is our guest today, and he spent the last almost 20 years now researching the JFK assassination, and he has written a book, Files on JFK. He's got a number of DVDs that are available. His website is jfkmurdersolved.com. He has done a tremendous amount of work, and we are honored to have him on the program here today. And Wim, welcome back for hour number two.
Okay. Well, before the break, I was telling about Hoover and Johnson, their problems with the Kennedys.
Right.
And, well, with Kennedy's murder, all their problems are solved, because Johnson appointed Hoover for life, and with the power of the presidency, he makes his own legal problems go away too. In fact, there is evidence that Hoover and Johnson had a party the night before the Kennedy assassination. That party was allegedly held in the house of their friend Clint Murchison, the oil billionaire. And it was attended by most of the suspects I mentioned before, including Carlos Marcello and Jack Ruby and Richard Nixon. That is a story as it's told by Johnson's mistress, Madeline Brown. And she said that Johnson told her that night that after tomorrow, the Kennedys would never be able to embarrass him again. So it is likely that Johnson was instrumental in luring Kennedy to Dallas, where he and his friends had control over the security and the police and the investigation. And that's also more or less what Jack Ruby wrote in a letter that he smuggled out of prison. And there are other occasions where Ruby tells journalists on camera about the conspiracy. But you will never see those clips on Fox or on CNN. As a matter of fact, if you like, I can let you hear that clip where he says that.
Well, let's play that right now.
Sorry?
Go ahead and play that. That'll be fine.
Yeah, let me quickly find it. Where is it? One second.
Okay.
There it is. Okay, here goes.
Okay.
Jack Ruby gave clear clues to his role in the assassination when he was interviewed on camera.
The world will never know the true facts of what occurred, my motives. The people had so much to gain and had such a material motive for putting me in a position I'm in. We'll never let the true facts come of that boy to the world.
Now, these people are in very high positions, Jack.
Yes.
Jack Ruby said he would reveal the true story of the Kennedy assassination if he was moved from Dallas to Washington, D.C. for protection. Ruby feared for his life if he testified in Dallas. But no transfer to Washington, D.C. was ever authorized by federal authorities.
Well, the second clip is too noisy to hear it, so I'm on my webpage now. So I will read that to you.
Okay.
He says there to journalists, I want to correct something I said earlier about the vice president. And then he says, when I mentioned about Adlai Stevenson, if he was vice president, there would never have been an assassination of President Kennedy. And then the reporter asks him, would you explain that, please? And he says then, well, the answer is the man in office now. And that man was Lyndon Johnson. So, you know, he clearly implicates Lyndon Johnson.
We have another name that people should remember from the Watergate days of the Nixon presidency in the 70s was Frank Sturgis.
Yeah, Frank Sturgis. He was another mercenary for the CIA, and he was involved in the Bay of Pigs and the Kennedy assassination, because I know he was also on Dealey Plaza that day. The same is, by the way, true for Orlando Bosch and Luis Posada Carriles. Those are two other anti-Castro Cubans on the CIA's payroll. I don't think we have time for that, but if we still have some time, we could get into that, because they are actually in the news right now and being protected by the Bush family. But Frank Sturgis, he was handled by Howard Hunt. And Howard Hunt and David Attlee Phillips worked together on the planning side, not only on the Kennedy assassination, but in other operations as well. And you can see, again, the connection with Nixon, because Hunt and Sturgis, they turn up in Watergate. They were two of the plumbers, the burglars that did the break-in. And the other burglars were also Cuban exiles. We have Martinez and Gonzalez and Bernard Barker. And they were also veterans of the Bay of Pigs. You see, the same names keep popping up in all those covert operations, from the Bay of Pigs to the Kennedy assassination, to the coup in Chile, the Cuban airline bombing in 1976, the Orlando Letelier assassination, all the way to Iran-Contra. And you know what? The common denominator in all these operations is George Herbert Walker Bush. You can connect him to all those operations. So he's really sort of a spider in the web.
And sort of the power broker, so to speak, in all this.
Very well insulated.
Very well. Let's move to the connection with the CIA and organized crime, and documents are continuing to flood out, really pointing to their obvious connection. A lot of people, I'm sure, thought there were some things that they could connect, but now even the CIA itself admits to trying to assassinate Castro. They admit their work in Chile to overthrow Allende, because the proof's out there.
Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about the CIA and the Mafia cooperation?
Let's mention Johnny Rosselli, who was their, I guess, sort of the liaison between the mob and CIA.
Yeah, well, you should understand that the CIA and the Mafia were in bed together. I mean, that has been proven and just admitted, as you said, with the plots to kill Castro. And you could actually compare it with the house with different rooms. And you can describe the rooms as different entities, but they are all part of the same house. So likewise, the Mafia and the CIA and the Cuban exiles and the Texan oilmen and the right-wing politicians, they were all part of the same machine. They were not different independent groups. They were in bed together. And they all wanted to get rid of Kennedy for their own reasons. Eisenhower, he called this machine the military-industrial complex. So you have the mob. They wanted Cuba back. They had huge investments in casinos and hotels there. And they hated the Kennedys for the betrayal of going after them. And the CIA, they were threatened in their very existence by JFK. He wanted to end their autonomy. He has even said that he wanted to splinter them in 1,000 pieces. And for the Bay of Pigs, he fired the top three men. That included Alan Dulles, who was later appointed on the Warren Commission, but also General Cabell, whose brother was the Major of Dallas. And the Texan oil billionaires, They disliked Kennedy also, not the least for his plans to abolish the so-called oil depletion allowance. That was a favorable tax measure for domestic oil, and that was actually the pillar under their wealth. And the right wing and the hawks in the Pentagon, they hated him for his civil rights policies and his softness on Castro and his peace policy towards Russia, the nuclear test bans, and his plans to withdraw from Vietnam. So we are talking about multi-billion dollar interest here in weapons and oil. And on top of that, Kennedy took on the interest-free money issued by the government. He wanted to print his own money, like the Constitution commands. So not by a private bank that enriches international bankers at the cost of the American taxpayer. So he really underestimated his enemies, and it was just a matter of time before they decided he had to go. I think Kennedy was actually a rather naive activist, and I believe his assassination in broad daylight was a warning for all future presidents that would dare to challenge these powers behind the scenes.
Let's talk a little bit about Sam Giancana.
Sam Giancana. Well, he was the crime boss of Chicago. And as I told you before, he had made this deal with Kennedy to leave the mafia alone. But it's actually a bit broader than that. The mafia and the CIA had already found each other in World War II when Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano helped the army with intelligence to invade Italy. And of course, they were also partners in the programs to kill Fidel Castro. That has all been declassified. And the CIA had recruited gangsters like Sam Giancana and John Roselli and Santo Trafficante as part of Operation Mongoose. And that was a program to assassinate Castro. But all these names are also prominent in the Kennedy assassination. So it's not so difficult to figure out what transpired there.
Well, Wim, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the FBI and retired agent Zach Shelton. That's coming up next right here on Good Morning Tri-Cities. It's our Conspiracy Friday program. Glad to have you with us here on Power Talk Radio.
They do say things that I think.
Then keep it here.
I like to hear a variety of different topics.
Power Talk 870 WPWT.
American and Import Auto Repair, home of the Lightning Lube Quick Oil Change or Bumper to Bumper Certified Service Centers, providing complete diagnostic maintenance and repair services on domestic and foreign vehicles. Their goal is to provide quality repairs at a reasonable price. Stop in today and let them show you why they're the best the Tri-Cities has to offer in auto maintenance and repair. American and Import Auto Repair is located at 3832 West Market Street in Johnson City. Their phone number is 913-3111 or visit them online at AmericanImportServices.com. Thanksgiving. What wonderful thoughts come to mind as we remember days that are past, taking time to reflect on God's goodness to us. Thanksgiving should be a daily activity, giving thanks to God for all that He provides. Why not pause right now and give thanks to Almighty God for all that He has given you through His Son, Jesus Christ? Appalachian Educational Communication Corporation and its Christian Educational Outreach, WHCB 91.5 FM, encourage you to give thanks to God today. Hey, Johnson City, we've got you covered. Get your free vinyl phone book covers at any of these fine businesses. Precision Home and Office Improvement, Old Army Concrete Design, Four Seasons Paving and Sealing, Realty Executives, Ace Garage Doors and Loading Dock Equipment, Super 8 Motel, Mountain Empire Vane Center, Miller's Outdoor Sporting Goods and Apparel, and Common Ground Landscaping and Mowing.
Welcome back to Good Morning Tri-Cities. We've got about 20 minutes after 9 o'clock on this Friday morning, the day after Thanksgiving, 38 degrees, mostly cloudy skies, and we rejoin our special guest, Wim Dankbar, from the Netherlands, who has authored the book Files on JFK and has done about almost 20 years worth of research on the JFK assassination and has put a tremendous amount of research together on his website, jfkmurdersolved.com. Now, Wim, our time is getting away from us quickly, but I want to move to the FBI. Over 85% of America does not believe the Warren Commission, and yet there was a retired FBI agent that played a key role in some of this information coming out that you have found, and others, such as Joe West, who really was the first person to begin some of this research and find some of the people that now you have been able to talk about, and that's retired agent Zach Shelton.
Yeah, Zach, he's a good friend of mine, and he's now retired from the FBI, but in the end of the 70s, he worked organized crime in Chicago, and he was working on an unrelated case involving James Files, where he received a tip about the possible involvement of the Chicago family in the Kennedy assassination. Because he was working with an informant, and you know, this case took him to Dallas, because James Files was also in Dallas, and the informant told him that Files had made a comment while they drove over Dealey Plaza. And the comment was more or less that if the American people would really know what happened there, they wouldn't be able to handle it. So that comment stuck in the back of Zach's mind, but he never acted on it because it had nothing to do with the case he was working on. And moreover, he knew that the FBI, especially under Hoover, had no interest to pursue the Kennedy assassination. But that's how he first learned of James Files and his possible involvement.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Joe West, and that was back in the 80s where he first got the tip from Zach Shelton and made contact with Files.
Yeah. Joe West, he was a private investigator from Texas, and at the end of the 80s, he was working on a lawsuit to exhume JFK's body. So we're talking about, 1989 now. And he wanted to prove that Kennedy was hit from the front. And this already indicates that Joe was sincere, because a new and independent autopsy of Kennedy's body, that would prove that the first one was a total fraud. So Joe had also received tips that Johnny Roselli and Charles Nicoletti, two known gangsters from Chicago, had been involved in the assassination of Kennedy. So a local Texas newspaper published an article about that. And that article was read by Zach. And Zach knew these names of Johnny Roselli and Nicoletti because he had worked cases on them. So he contacted Joe West and told him about the comment that James Files had made 10 years earlier about Dealey Plaza. And Zach also told Joe West that Files was in prison somewhere in the United States, but he did not know where, but that it might be a good idea to try and find him. And the next time that Zach heard about Joe West again is that he died. So Zach called called the lawyer that Joe was working with and asked him if he ever tried to find James Files. And the lawyer told him that indeed Joe West had found James Files in Joliet Prison in Illinois, and that Files apparently knew a lot more about the assassination. But Joe West has never heard a full confession from James Files, because Files, he didn't want to talk. Only if Joe could arrange immunity for him, he would think about talking. So during that time, Joe had to go in hospital for a heart operation. And the surgery itself, that was a big success, because right after, he was straight up in bed again and drinking a Coke and joking with the nurses. But then out of the blue, a complication arose, and he went into a coma and never came out of it. So with his death, his exhumation lawsuit also died. Now, James Files claims that he was informed that Joe's death was not natural, that he actually was murdered by tampering with his medication. And that was one of the major reasons to come forward with this full story, because he had really come to like Joe West, and he did it basically for the memory of Joe West.
Well, from everything that I've been able to read, Joe West was a fine man. He was a former pastor and had become an investigative reporter, and like a lot of people, such as yourself, became intrigued with the JFK assassination and decided to see what he could find out.
Yeah. Well, I dedicate my film, my major work also to him, to his memory, because I think he is one of the finest men in this whole history.
After Joe West passed away, Bob Vernon picked up the ball, so to speak, and began to make contact with James Files, and eventually James agreed to sit down and do a video confession titled The Confession of an Assassin, which was, I guess, recorded back in about, what, 1994, I believe?
Yeah, the first one was in 1994.
Yeah. Blockbuster Video, and this is where I came across it the first time. Had it out in their stores across the country back in about 1996, and I rented a copy of it, and it was a very, very
As a matter of fact, if you like, I can let you hear the clip where he tells you about the shots.
Sure, we've got just enough time to do that.
Okay. Give me a sec here. Yeah, here it comes.
We live in a novel situation. We live in a country of over 230 million people.
This is first Jim Garrison talking.
Okay.
This is a clip from,
that's who I thought that sounded like.
We're now, for more than 20 years, the official government position with regard to the assassination of one of the finest presidents we ever had. The official government position continues to be that it was done by a lone assassin. This is now nearly a decade after the House Subcommittee on Assassinations concluded that it was a conspiracy. Nevertheless, the official position remains that it was done by a lone assassin. The position which initially was concluded and announced by the Warren Commission so many years past, the infamous Warren Commission. And I say infamous because most thinking people in the United States recognized that without any question there had to be more than one gun shooting. It's obvious. And it was obvious to everyone at Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963.
And at that point, when they started proceeding down Elm Street, shots started being fired from behind. And I assumed that it was Mr. Nicoletti because he was the one that was in the building, and I knew that Johnny Roselli was there. And I remember the shots ringing out, and even though the president was being hit with the rounds, I was considering it a miss because I knew that we were going for a headshot on the president. And I had known he had been hit in the body, but I didn't know what part at that time. And I seen the body lurch, and I saw the body lurch again. I heard another shot that missed, and we were supposed to hit no one but Conley. I mean, no one but Mr. Kennedy. And I guess Governor Conley got hit with one of the rounds at that point. And I wasn't even sure of that because I was keeping Kennedy as best I could in the scope on the fireball. And when I got to the point where I thought it would be the last field of fire, I had zeroed in to the left side of the head there that I had, because if I waited any longer, then Jacqueline Kennedy would have been in the line of fire. And I had been instructed for nothing to happen to her. And at that moment, I figured this is my last chance for a shot, and he still had not been hit in the head. So as I fired that round, Mr. Nicoletti and I had fired approximately at the same time as the hit started forward, then it went backward. And when I would have to say that his shell struck approximately 1,000th of a second ahead of mine, maybe, that's what started pushing the head forward, which caused me to miss in the left eye, and I came in on the left side of the temple.
Well, that is from the first interview that
right.
Bob Vernon took. Bob Vernon took over from Joe West on the request of his widow.
Well, we're going to talk more about James Files in our final half hour here on Good Morning Tri-City. So you stay right with us. We're going to take another break, and then we'll be back to talk more with Vim Dank Barr on our Good Morning Tri-Cities program. It's Conspiracy Friday. back after these messages.
Come on in. You're welcome anytime. Power Talk 870, WPWT, Colonial Heights.
When a relationship ends, it usually hurts for both people involved, and friendship after the fact is a rarity. I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger explaining the bright side of a caller's breakup in today's moment.
We were shacking up before I started listening to you and had enough sense to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah, but he's wonderful. I really do love him. We don't have time for each other, being in college and really busy and whatnot. But I'm just wondering if it's just a really bad idea to try to maintain that friendship.
You can't if he loves you.
Really?
Really.
Okay. All right. That's all I really needed to hear, I guess.
But it sounds like you had a very good, sort of, almost, kind of, good experience with somebody. And as you grow up now and into an adult, because you're only 20, last year you were a teenager. So as you grow into your 20s and come more into your own time and space and know who you are and what you need and what you want, and you mature enough to be a giving, loving person, and you're ready to settle down, at least you don't have a whole list of horrible experiences that make you crass and paranoid about getting together with somebody. So it's
right.
A good thing.
Frankly, I don't understand fuel cell technology, but everybody understands cleaner air. That's why Chevy is putting a test fleet of 100 hydrogen-powered Equinox fuel cell vehicles in metropolitan New York City, D.C., and L.A. Hydrogen fuel cells produce zero emissions and use zero gasoline. So next time you see one, remember you can't buy them, but you can applaud. Someday our grandkids may be cruising in them under some really beautiful blue skies. Go to Chevy.com and learn more. Do more. Use less.
And if you spend just $299 or more on anything here at Lowe's and put it on your Lowe's consumer credit card, you can ask for special financing until January 2009.
Excuse me?
Special financing until January 2009.
Again, please?
Special financing until January 2009. Are you having trouble hearing what I'm saying, sir?
No, I just love hearing you say it.
Save now and get special financing if you spend $299 or more on your Lowe's consumer credit card. And this Friday only, get a 6-foot artificial Christmas tree for only $29. Lowe's, let's build something together. See store for details.
Very smart.
What is?
You put the kids' Christmas gifts in Walgreens bags.
What?
So in case they go snooping for their gifts, they won't think to look in these bags.
They're in the Walgreens bags because that's where I got the gifts.
Really?
But you're right. They won't think to look in them.
If only everyone knew Walgreens is a great place to get gifts, offering a wide selection of toys and electronics at thousands of locations.
Friday only. Don't miss the great savings at Walgreens 7-hour sale.
Another how-to half minute from the Home Depot.
Honey, want to go gift shopping with me this weekend?
Mm.
I'm going to a store you might like.
Pungent Candles R Us, moisturizers and more, Robe World brands.
Actually, I'm looking for good gifts, so I'm going to a big event at Home Depot.
I love you.
Get great gifts throughout the store, like a stainless steel 4-burner gas grill for only $179 this weekend at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S. only through November 25th while supplies last. See store for details.
Welcome back in to Good Morning Tri-Cities. Cloudy skies, 38 degrees, breezy and cold out there on your Friday morning. Glad you're with us. Our guest is Wim Dankbar on Good Morning Tri-Cities on this Friday, the day after the 44th anniversary of the assassination of our 35th president, John F. Kennedy. His website is jfkmurdersolved.com. And, Wim, we were talking about James Files before we had to break, so we want to continue bringing the people up to date. I'm sure there are a number of listeners out there that have never heard of him, and he is a central figure in tying everything together.
Right. Yeah, we just heard a clip of his confession of 1994, the first one, where he was a lot more nervous than the one in 2003, which I did. But in both interviews, he is saying that JFK was hit by another bullet from behind, and that's what caused him to miss the right eye, because JFK's head snapped forward first, from the impact of the bullet that hit him in the head from behind. And that is exactly what we see in the Zapruder film. For a fraction of a second, the head goes forward first, and then it goes back into the to the left. But you cannot see that with the naked eye. You cannot, you can even not see it in slow motion, or with a frame by frame analysis, then you can see it. So there are two possibilities. One is that Files made a frame by frame study of the Zapruder film, and two is that he actually knows from own experience that the head went forward first because he was aiming for the right eye, and he missed because the head snapped forward first. And that's, of course, what I believe.
Well, you know, he mentioned, and I think we need to maybe clarify for some people maybe listening. Well, he said he shot from the left side, but he was talking about left in the sense of how he was looking through the scope.
Oh, yeah, that's also what the, his discreditors claim. Oh, he's wrong. He says he hit the left side of the head while it was its right side of the head. But, you know, this is a stupid argument because to him it was left. That's actually only a mistake that the real assassin would make.
Well, I think that, again, once you see the Zapruder film, and then when we talk about where he is located, Files on the grassy knoll, it makes sense. And plus, he clarified that. As you mentioned in that first video, and since I've seen it, I can definitely agree with you. He was exceptionally nervous and much more relaxed in the interview that Jim Mars and you did with him. Let's talk about James Files. How in the world did he ever get involved with the JFK assassination?
Okay, well, you first have to know that he started out as an undercover asset for the CIA. So later on, he became involved with organized crime. He says that he went into the army and he served in Laos and Vietnam at a very young age. And he says that after he was after that, he was recruited by David Edley Phillips to train men for the Bay of Pigs. And that was after Files killed two of his own men in Laos. Actually, that was what triggered the interest of the CIA to him, because he really made his mark there as a sharpshooter by shooting these men in the head from a big distance. And they were fleeing, and Files thought they were cowards, so he killed them. So Files was court-martialed for that, but the CIA swept that under the carpet because they could use him for the Bay of Pigs. And that, oh, that's also interesting, that was done after a recommendation of Ted Shackley. Now, Ted Shackley was the deputy director of special operations under George Bush when he was director of the CIA. So there you have that connection with Bush again. And later, Files became involved with organized crime. He got to know Charles Nicoletti, and he became a driver and a bodyguard for Charles Nicoletti. And Charles Nicoletti, he was a trusted enforcer and a hitman for Sam Giancana. And Giancana was the boss of organized crime in Chicago. And James Files, he really worshipped Charles Nicoletti. He says it was his god, kind of a surrogate father. So he walked on water to James Files. And Nicoletti, he entrusted him with whatever job needed to be done. Of course, most of those jobs were contract murders.
I think a lot of things that come through in the DVDs and the videos that you did, James Files is a very hard man, especially in the first one. I mean, I think it's hard for us to relate to someone that looked at carrying out a murder contract just like you carried the garbage out. He just followed the orders.
Yeah. Nothing personal.
Right. He was just doing a job, and that's what he talked. It was almost, it's not comical, but it was in the way that he talked about it. We would never think about something like that. But the thing, too, he's a very young man at this time.
He was only 21.
And that's another thing that's interesting. Oswald was 24. These were not older men that were being used in this. These were younger men that had been in service, been in the military, or had some sort of connection in that way. And they were willing to do whatever they were told.
Yeah, exactly.
Why was Files going to Dallas?
files was going to Dallas just to examine the area and test the weapons that Nicoletti and Roselli would use. So he was initially nothing more than an errand boy. And that's why he was sent to Dallas a week in advance. So James Files, he had no idea that he would be involved in the assassination itself until the morning of November 22nd, because that's when Charles Nicoletti asked him to be the backup shooter. And that was because Roselli had flown into Dallas with last-minute instructions to abort the hit on Kennedy. Apparently the CIA didn't want it to go through. So Roselli got cold feet and didn't want to go against those orders. But on the other hand, he could not disobey Sam Giancana, and he wanted the hit to go through. So Nicoletti said, "I have a go from the boss. Fuck him. We do it anyway." That's what he said, according to Files.
So Giancana basically was the one that called the shots for the hit.
Yeah, Giancana was still over Roselli. Roselli could not refuse an order from Giancana. So it's first glance a very implausible detail that such a young guy is being asked last minute to take part in the shooting. But on the other hand, you know, a hoaxer or a liar doesn't invent implausible details if he wants to be believed. So that's one of the reasons why Files is telling the truth. So James Files, he said that he would be honored to back up Nicoletti. And Nicoletti and Roselli, they would be in the Dell Tax building, which is not the school book depository building where Oswald worked. And James Files took his position on the grassy knoll. That was much closer to Kennedy. But what you have to know is that Files was instructed to shoot only when Nicoletti would miss. Nicoletti told him that they wanted all the shots from behind, and that they were to shoot Kennedy in the head. So James Files was not supposed to shoot. He was only to be some kind of insurance if Kennedy was not shot in the head. So when Files had Kennedy in the scope, he counted shots, but not like one, two, three, but like miss, miss, miss. And he saw Kennedy being hit, and also Governor Connolly, but not in the head. So he has to decide whether he shoots. And because Kennedy had still not been hit in the head, and Jackie Kennedy would come in into his field of fire, he decided to shoot. So he took one shot. That's all he had anyway with that gun. And that's the famous shot you see in the Zapruder film.
And this gun has come under a lot of scrutiny, the Remington Fireball.
Yeah. Remington had just designed that. It's a cut-down rifle. Actually, it's a pistol with a long barrel, and it can have a scope on it. It was way ahead of his time in 1963. It was very accurate, and the CIA was very interested in it. So what Files used was a prototype and had been given to him by David Edley Phillips.
Now, another thing, after Files fired the shot, he did something with the shell casing that is really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, there was a casing found in 1987 near the spot where Files said he was standing. And it has very little attention in the media, or it had very little attention in the media. It's just a small article in a local newspaper. And when James Files gave his first confession in 1994 to Bob Vernon, who had taken over from Joe West, Files said that he had bitten on the shell casing after he took the shot, and he left it there on the crossbar of the picket fence. And then he put the weapon back in his briefcase and turned his jacket inside out, and he walked away. So when Bob Vernon heard that story about the casing, he vaguely recalled that the shell had been found a few years before, that he had seen that in the paper clippings from Joe West. So Files said, "Well, if that's my shell casing, you should be able to recognize it because my teeth marks should be on it. The end will be oval and not round." And it's impossible that Files could have known this from the media because nothing was said about dent marks. Even the finder, John Rademacher, who found that shell, he did not know what the indents were. So until then, he had only guessed that there could be ejection marks. So Bob contacted this Rademacher, and he had the casing examined by a professor in orthodontology. And this professor, he certified that to him they were indeed human teeth marks. So, yeah.
That in itself is a story worth pursuing that we just don't have time to get into details with, but a lot more information on the website. We're going to take our final break of this segment and come back and talk a little bit more about James Files and some of the other people that are involved as we talk with Wim Dankbar here on our Good Morning Tri-Cities program. And we want you to stay tuned. We've got more coming up here in just a moment, so be right back.
It's the only morning show for your mind.
I like his honesty and his frankness. Every day I listen to him, I learn.
Good Morning Tri-Cities. Weekdays on Power Talk 870. Breakfast for your brain.
Thanksgiving. What wonderful thoughts come to mind as we remember days that are past, taking time to reflect on God's goodness to us. Thanksgiving should be a daily activity, giving thanks to God for all that He provides. Why not pause right now and give thanks to Almighty God for all that He has given you through His Son, Jesus Christ. Appalachian Educational Communication Corporation and its Christian Educational Outreach, WHCB 91.5 FM, encourage you to give thanks to God today.
Brian's profile definitely jumped out at me, and I was excited to get to know this person better.
That's Amy, who met her husband Brian on eHarmony.com. And I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, the founder of eHarmony. Amy mentioned Brian's profile. You see, on eHarmony, that's where it all starts. Based on your profile, we match you with compatible singles. And then, well, let's hear Amy tell it.
And I was just keeping my fingers crossed, you know, that we would have chemistry and we'd be a great match when we finally met. And on our first date, the first time I saw him, it was just pow.
Compatibility paired with chemistry. Like Amy said, it hits you with a resounding pow. Aren't you curious to see who you're compatible with? You've heard me mention the free personality profile, but did you know that it's also free to review your matches? That's right, absolutely free to review your matches. There's really nothing to lose and so very much to gain. See for yourself at eHarmony.com.
$50,000, going once, going twice, sold to the gentleman in the rear.
Great, now I want to sell it.
So what?
That thing I just bought.
All right, do I hear $20,000?
Constantly buying and selling stocks doesn't make much sense either. That's why Edward Jones recommends investment strategies that have proven themselves over the long term. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC. For help making sense of your investments, contact Brad Baker, proud Appalachian alumnus. Your Bristol Edward Jones investment representative on Volunteer Parkway.
If you're looking for a great job with a great company, Advance Call Center on Boones Creek Road is hiring new employees, hiring several shifts plus full benefits. A great chance to advance with 90% of promotions coming from within, part-time as well as full-time. Fill out an application Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Look for the ACT sign at Advanced Call Center Technologies on Boones Creek Road, Johnson City. Advanced Call Center Technologies, 283-5023.
We're back here on Good Morning Tri-Cities. Our time about 11 minutes before 10 o'clock, and we're about out of time, so we're going to quickly get back with our special guest, Wim Dankbar from the Netherlands, who has compiled the information on his website, jfkmurdersolved.com. He has the book Files on JFK, a number of DVDs as well, and we encourage you to check that website out. Wim, the week before that James Files was on the grassy knoll, when he got to Dallas, he made a couple of phone calls to Charles Nicoletti, and then to David Attlee Phillips, his controller with the CIA, and then somebody came to his door the next morning.
Yes, Lee Harvey Oswald. He spent time with Lee Harvey Oswald almost every day in the week before the assassination. Lee said that he was instructed to show him the area. And they knew each other already from half a year before. They were introduced to each other by David Attlee Phillips. who was their controller, both of Lee Harvey Oswald and James Files.
Now, another one of the events that people will remember that occurred in Dallas shortly after the assassination was the murder of the Dallas police officer, J.D. Tippit. And, of course, Oswald was charged with that shooting.
Yeah, right. But the man that killed Officer Tippit was not Lee Harvey Oswald. It was actually a guy that was on assignment to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. But something went wrong there, and he was stopped by Officer Tippit. So he killed Officer Tippit. And he then went to Files Motel. Obviously, he knew this from David Etley Phillips, his boss, to say that he had screwed up and missed Oswald. And he said that he had to burn a cop and asked Files if he could take care of his gun. But Files sent him away. He said, get the hell out of here and solve your own problems. And Files does not want to name this man because apparently the man is still alive. And Files has a code that he does not read on people that are still alive. But he did say that the man worked for David Etley Phillips, not for organized crime. So this man was purely CIA. And I wanted to make another point about the shooting from the grassy knoll, which I think is rather important. We have seen the incredible detail that, you know, a rookie of 21 shot the president, actually, and was not told about his taking part in the assassination until that morning. But he's actually the rookie that managed to shoot JFK in the head from the grassy knoll. And I'm now firmly convinced that the whole shot from the grassy knoll was not meant to be, because it placed the conspirators in an awkward position. And that's why they had to keep the Zapruder film away from the public, and that's why they had to fake the autopsy pictures, and that's why they had to use drawings to explain the wounds. And if you want to blame it on the Patsy, and the Patsy is behind, then you don't want shots from the front. And that's also why Nicoletti was pissed at Files that he had taken the shot afterwards.
Well,
it's a point I wanted to make about the right. Grassy knoll shot.
Now, a couple of other people that are key figures in Daley Plaza that day include Tosh Plumlee.
Yeah, Tosh Plumlee, he was the CIA contract pilot that flew Johnny Roselli to Dallas that morning. I can go into his story, but we don't have time.
We don't have time. I just want to just mention names so that people maybe can do some of their own research. And also Chauncey Holt.
Chauncey Holt, he was one of the three tramps. And he was a CIA operative and a mafia associate. And he died in 1997. And he worked for mafia bosses Mario Lansky and Peter Licavoli. And he has testified that he drove with Charles Nicoletti to Dallas. So we have Roselli and Nicoletti, two of the partners of James Files that day. And we have two other people that don't know James Files that say we brought those people to Dallas. So that's sort of an independent corroboration.
And Files had no idea how they got there.
No. He was never told. Oh, yeah, Roselli told him that morning that he got lucky and he got a ride
got a flight.
On the CIA plane.
Right, he got a flight. And so it's interesting that you have people that did not know each other saying the same things.
Right, yeah. And the story of Chauncey Holt, by the way, he explains much more about the height of the conspiracy. He was not a shooter, but... his story is more documented. He can prove basically anything he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he was brought to a safe house in Acapulco by Joe Ball, who owned that safe house. Joe Ball was the big shot attorney that actually served on the Warren Commission. So you can see how corrupt it was that the people serving on the Warren Commission keep the true suspects away from that Warren Commission.
Wim, we've got just a few minutes left. So I want to have you sort of just sum up what your research has uncovered. What do you think brought about the JFK assassination?
Well, if I would wrap it up, I would summarize it as a coup d'etat, planned and carried out by a rogue but powerful elements of the CIA in collaboration with organized crime and Cuban exiles, trained by the CIA, and that operation had the blessing and the consent of the highest elements of the U.S. government. And that included Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover, but also Nixon and George Bush. And all these people benefited from the death of John Kennedy. It's like Donald Sutherland says in the movie JFK, who had the means and the motives to do it, who had the power to cover it up, and last but not least, who benefited. You can also say it like this. You know, the potential Kennedy dynasty was replaced by a Bush dynasty. That's a shorter version.
And then there's a lot of other information in your book, Files on JFK, and some of the correspondence that Files has carried on with you and others over these number of years that will allow people to connect some more dots to some other situations that have taken place in the last 40 years or so. And we won't take time to go into that, but it's in the book, which leads me to give you a couple of minutes to talk a little bit about your website.
Yeah. Well, I would just say go there and you will see it.
It's jfkmurdersolved.com. And it's got all kinds of information. And plus, on the website, you do have all your materials that are available, correct? Maybe you could run through that list of materials that are available.
Yes. If you order the full package, you get 6 DVDs plus the book for $100.
And I bought that a few weeks back, and the DVDs are invaluable. The book is about 600 pages of great information and gives you a lot of other details and about things that you may have remembered back when we were going through the 60s and all the things that were going on, not only in Cuba, but in the late 70s in MENA, Arkansas. You might find out a little information about what happened to Marilyn Monroe, all kinds of good information in this book that at least give you some food for thought. And, Wim, I just want to take time to thank you so much for taking time to call in today and share this information with our listeners. And maybe one of these days everything will come out in the open.
Yeah, well, I'll keep pounding the wall to break it.
So you're still researching, still doing all sorts of searches to try to find out.
It's an ongoing process, and I make new discoveries. So it's, you know,
now
finished.
Just quickly for some people that may be asking, James Files is still alive in prison up in Illinois.
Yeah.
Zach Shelton is still alive, the former FBI agent.
Rush Blomley supposedly still alive, and Judith is still alive. Chauncey Holt is dead.
Now, the man that you claim was the shooter of J.D. Tippit, there have been rumors that he had recently passed away. Have you been able to confirm that?
No.
So,
but I'm looking into that. That's all I can say at this moment.
Wim, I want to again thank you for doing this program. Here it is, 44 years and a day after the assassination took place in Daly Plaza in Dallas, Texas. And I know that you're going to continue to get more information out on your website. And we appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and we'll be looking forward to corresponding right on through as more information comes out.
Yeah, let me make one last remark.
Sure.
It's not to pound myself on the chest, but you can ask yourself why my book, Files on JFK, is the only JFK book on Amazon.com with a 5-star rating. And then you should ask yourself why you never heard of that book. I mean, that sums it up pretty well, I think.
Well, again, we want to thank you for being with us, and as soon as I close out, I'll visit with you for a minute off the air. So hang on just a moment. All right. Wim Dankbar has been our guest today on Good Morning Tri-Cities. All the views and opinions expressed on the program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of the radio station. You're listening to Power Talk Radio, WPWT Colonial Heights. This is Mark Ferguson. Have a great day, everybody. It's 10 o'clock.